Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So, today I'm joined by Bill Taranto, who's Managing Director of Global Health Innovation Fund at Merck. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Andrew. How are you today?
Very good, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. Update the sort of the interview that I did with you probably about 5 years ago now, and you really did a great job at our recent GCV Academy in New York outlining your Global Health Innovation Fund and what you're doing now in what I believe is pushing the boundaries on how corporate venturing should be working. So really appreciate it. Please, if you kick off by giving us an introduction to yourself and to the Global Health Innovation Fund at Merck.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate it. And great to talk to you and do an interview again after a number of years, because a lot has changed actually since the first interview we did. So my name is Bill Taranto, and as Andrew said, I'm head of Merck's Global Health Innovation Fund. I joined Merck, it'll be actually 7 years, this April, to actually start their venture capital, activities. They hadn't actually done any venture capital work prior to that. And prior to joining Merck, I was at Johnson & Johnson for close to 20 years and spending the majority of my career investing for them as well. But I joined Merck in 2010 because it was actually a really unique opportunity. First, because Merck hadn't done it before, but number two, because it was almost like a fresh palette to paint on, because Merck really wasn't sure what they wanted to do, but I had a pretty good understanding of what I wanted to do after spending so many years at Johnson & Johnson. But first and foremost, what's a little unusual about what we structured here is that when we started the fund, Merck's an unusual corporate venture in the fact that we don't invest on behalf of the core business. So the primary function of the fund is to generally sell more pills or enhance the core in a traditional way. The actual remit of the fund was to put Merck into new healthcare businesses that drive revenue and EPS. So really the main purpose of the fund is to give Merck optionality around M&A. So that makes us a little unusual as a corporate venture, because the majority of corporate venture capital firms are put in place to really invest on behalf of the core. So that makes us a little unique. What's different also is a little history of the fund. So when I joined, as I said, I had a kind of a clear vision of what I wanted to do, and the biggest thing I wanted was something that I call freedom to operate. So I wanted to make sure that when I started, we actually structured the fund in a way that we could grow, number one, but also allow us to do the job that Merck had hired us to do and not be encumbered by being inside of a corporate. So first and foremost, what we did was we set up as a separate LLC, which gave us independence from Merck. The second thing that I wanted to make sure was that all the strategy investment thesis was created by the team, that we weren't taking direct investment advice from Merck. And the reason for that is that we were hired to really look at this outside adjacent world and Merck's role on a daily basis to create ethical pharmaceutical products. So with us doing this full time, we have a better view of the outside world and what are the best places for Merck to look at and for us to invest in versus Merck. So I wanted that freedom to really create our own investment strategy.
I think it's a really good point there, because I think most corporates, they have this dilemma between being strategic and financial, and they say, oh, we're strategic because we do the things that the business units want. And I often say, well, actually, that makes you tactical. It doesn't make you strategic. And I think the way you've described it there, I think really brings that across, that looking outside of what the core business does can make you more strategic than just doing what the business units want. Would you agree with that?
I would agree 100%. And what's interesting also about our fund is if you ask me am I a strategic fund or a financial fund, I might actually tell you I'm both. And the reason is this, that, and you can be both, is that if you look at the way this fund is structured, and if our goal is to give Merck optionality around M&A, the reality is Merck is not going to buy every portfolio company, which means I have to be a smart financial investor and create a good healthcare company that I can exit along with my other shareholders and create value in the system. So the whole idea for us is we're probably financial first and strategic second, because we do want to obviously understand where Merck's going, but it's an important distinction where I believe you can actually be both, and the smart way for a corporate venture to work is be both financial and strategic instead of one or the other.
Yeah, excellent. Good, great point.
Yes. So as I was saying, you know, where we set the fund, the other interesting thing that we did from sort of that freedom to operate sort of perspective is that when we set up our venture board, which is our investment committee, if you will, We wanted to make the committee just a yes-no function. So what happens is we have an investment board that's a 10-member board, which I'm a voting member of. And when we bring an investment in, their only function is to say yes or no to an investment. If they say yes to an investment, we then take over that investment, actually run our own transaction shop, and we actually consummate that investment from everything from creating the term sheet all the way through the execution of the documents to wiring of the money and then managing it post-investment. From the standpoint of taking a board seat, we're very active investors. Well, why is that an important function? Well, part of it is around, again, if you work in a large corporate, you can get bogged down by the machinations of a corporate and the internal sort of nature of it. So one of the two things we want to do is we want to have an easy process for getting approval, number one, and number two, we wanted to outsource everything we did. We didn't want to be reliant on the internal functions of Merck, which could take a long time for them to respond to you because they have other priorities. So everything we do is outsourced from a legal perspective, a due diligence perspective, a financial evaluation perspective. And what that does is allows us to mimic a private firm where we can actually do an investment as fast as 4 weeks if we like, or we can take as long as we want based on the type of investment we're doing. So again, it's all around that freedom to operate and really have the ability to almost mimic, even though we're a corporate, what a private firm does. And I think that has set us up in a way that allows us to then function almost totally independent from Merck, yet Merck is still our primary LP, our only LP, and our parent. But we give the impression and the way we work as an independent firm, which I think is important. The final thing I'll say is that most people don't remember that when you did the interview with me, you know, 5.5, 6 years ago, we actually were only a $125 million fund. We started actually quite small. And what I did was I sort of mapped out over sort of a 5-year period what the fund would look like. And one of the things I wanted to make sure that we had set up over time was, one, the ability for the fund to grow. So what we ended up doing is in 2010, we started the fund at 125. We doubled in 2011 to 250. And then 2013, we doubled again to $500 million. And the reason for that was we were broadening the areas in which we were investing in, and it required more capital. The other thing that I did in 2013, which we had mapped out in 2010, was we set up another sort of sister company to the venture fund, which is our private equity fund. It's called the Merck Global Health Private Equity Fund. And why did we set that up? And I only say this because it actually is another tool in the toolbox around corporate innovation, is that we found ourselves in situations where Merck really liked the company, but maybe they weren't ready to acquire it, but we needed to invest more capital that the fund wasn't able to do based on the fund's remit and size. So we started this growth equity or private equity fund, which would allow us then to invest more capital with larger partners and extend Merck's option around that particular asset. And then finally, we have an M&A function that, of course, if Merck likes the asset and would choose to acquire it, we do that. So today, you know, we're a $500 million fund. We have over 35 portfolio companies. We've had actually, from the talk I did, we've had about 7 exits to date, and Merck's actually acquired 2 of our companies to date. So we think we're delivering what Merck asked us to on day one, which was to try to give Merck a number of options around this sort of non-core area of healthcare.
Okay, Bill, great. So could you give us some examples or that overview then of what connected health means to Merck and your fund?
Absolutely. So one of the most important things that I think a venture fund needs to do is have a strategy, especially a corporate venture fund. So when you say you're investing on behalf of the core, that's not actually a strategy. That's really more about a broad tactic. And even if you're, like, what I would say, I'm investing not on behalf of the core, that's not really a strategy. And I think one of the most fundamental mistakes a corporate venture firm makes is not having a well-defined strategy. The way we think of our strategy, and healthcare very uniquely is positioned to have this type of strategy, in that what happens in healthcare versus other sort of industries is it's really hard to scale because of the local and regional nature of which how healthcare is practiced. So you don't have to build a strategy around how you're going to invest and how you're actually going to scale and then bring that value back to your parent company. So we created this thing called Connected Health. And the way to think about it is operating on a 2 fundamental investment thesis, and this is, again, only related to healthcare. Our first investment thesis is that we believe data is the currency we're going to use to transact in the future market. So what does that mean? It means that we want all of our companies to touch data in some way, whether they're aggregating data, analyzing data, whether they're throwing off data like a diagnostic test or a monitoring company, that they all touch data in a certain way. Because healthcare is all based on value and outcomes. And so data is what drives that value and outcomes. So that's our key first fundamental investment thesis. The second is that one of the big lessons I learned from all the years investing at J&J, in healthcare specifically, point solutions don't work. And a point solution is a very, narrow company focused on a very narrow sort of widget, if you will. And the problem with healthcare is it's much more broader than that when you're trying to solve a problem within healthcare. And so what we work in, what we call an interconnected healthcare framework, what we try to do is we try to connect companies. And by that, what we try to do is when we look at an investment company, if we can't connect it to another company within our portfolio or outside of our portfolio, we don't do that investment. So what we're trying to do is make sure that we can partner this company. And partnering can mean a lot of things. It can mean actually merging them together, or it can be a commercial agreement, or it can just be a handshake that we're going to try to work together and deliver an integrated solution to the market. So the way we think about it in healthcare, and what the slide I presented at the meeting that we had, is that in healthcare, the way we think about it is if you look at the bottom of the slide, existing data tools exist today. So there's existing data that is commodity data, and these are things like electronic medical records data, claims data, that everybody has access to today. You can actually buy this data. The problem is it doesn't tell you a lot about a specific patient. So we're really interested in investing what we call emerging informational tools. And these can be things like point-of-care diagnostic companies. It could be molecular diagnostic companies. It could be remote monitoring. It could be mobile and social. It's all this new data that's being generated by these companies. Now, our goal is to merge this new data with commodity data, and you create what's called a longitudinal patient data set that's much deeper, and we know more about a patient than we knew before. So that's the beginning of it. What's really important for us is the next step, which is investing in the middle layer, health IT platforms. Well, why is that important? The problem is if you can't aggregate data, integrate data, and harmonize data, you can't actually use that data that you're collecting. So what we want to have is make sure we have an infrastructure layer that allows us to do, three main things. One is to secure data in a private setting so to be HIPAA compliant. Two is to aggregate, integrate, harmonize that data, and then third is we want to analyze that data. So we're interested in companies that can do all those type of things, because the problem you have is you actually can't get to a solution in the end if you just have disparate data and you don't have an infrastructure layer. So we want to make sure as we're collecting new data, we're providing the middle layer in order to house that data to make it usable to get to the upper layer of this slide, which is things where all the solutions occur, things like precision medicine, which are things like diagnostic companies. It could be things like monitoring companies, the right patient, right place, right time sort of concept. We're very interested in clinical awareness and decision support tools and how you get into the workflow of practicing medicine. We're really interested in quality and performance improvement. So how do you go into a hospital system and remove costs and create better efficiencies? And that could be things like care coordination. It could be things like infection control. And finally, we're very interested in the provider and patient engagement. How do you actually talk to the physician and talk to the patient, and how do they talk together so you can actually bring better quality information to all the right parties? But all this works together, because if you just do investments in any one of these small buckets, that's a point solution. If you do investments in these buckets and connect them to other buckets, that's the integrated healthcare framework that we work in. So again, what we try to do is follow our two investment theses: data is the currency, make sure it's a data company, and second, make sure we can connect it to another company.
Yeah, no, great overview there, I think, Bill, in terms of giving the health example. But certainly I'm seeing now the points you're making here, I'll emphasize it now, but we'll come back to it later, I'm sure, that we're seeing the same thing now in other sectors, automotive, utility, consumer, agriculture, other organizations I'm working with in these sort of sectors, because like automotive now is not about a metal box on rubber with some electronics in it. It's now about autonomous vehicles, it's about data, it's about car sharing, it's about the whole value chain and ecosystem. And we're seeing it again in utility businesses. It's not just about providing electrons as electricity. It's about security, it's about health, it's about entertainment. Consumer is the same sort of thing in that as well. And this overlap now, I think, is happening, that is it now health, or is it wellness, or is it well-being, or is it, improving life? That some of these things, the industry definitions are changing in that as well. So I think, as you've illustrated here in terms of health and within Merck, I think is applicable to other sectors, I think.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You call it value chain, we call it ecosystem investing. I know we'll cover it later in another question, but it's the most important foundation of what we do. But I agree with you. I'm starting to see in all other industries where point solutions, even in other industries, aren't working, that you actually have to work in this sort of value chain or ecosystem and bring companies together to bring much more even holistic or engaged sort of solution to the market, because they can't seem to get where they want to go with sort of that point solution answer.
That's right.
The bigger question you're trying to solve.
Yeah. So before we move on to the ecosystem and what I term innovative new value chains, maybe we could talk a bit about the people within your team and that first. You've talked about the purpose. You've talked about the process that you're working with. Could you describe some of the team that you've now got within Merck and the broader partners, please?
Absolutely. So the way we structured the team originally is, and again, this is, makes us a bit unusual, is that when I joined Merck, one of the most important things was to be able to get out the door quickly and begin investing and begin building what we were supposed to build for Merck. So we didn't have the luxury of hiring what I would consider junior people or people with inexperience in the venture world or even sort of the analyst sort of level. We actually had to hire immediately very experienced people with a lot of years of experience in the venture community that could actually, you know, effectuate the strategy we had in place. So I was very fortunate when I came over from J&J to bring a couple J&J folks with me. So the way we're structured is each person on the team sort of has a specialty, but they actually can invest really in any sort of area. So part of the team is a gentleman, Joel Crixton, who came from J&J, and he focuses on our care coordination and hospital sort of effectiveness and efficiency solutions as a primary investor. David Rubin is our clinical investor, so he does all of our personalized medicine or precision medicine investing, so anything in the diagnostic space or anything that has a clinical bent to it. David Stevenson has two roles in our group. He is both our chief operating officer. He manages all the funds, back office operations, and our strategy. But he also invests in all of our diabetes companies, so our sort of therapeutic diabetes space is where he focuses. Joe Volpe, who also joined me from J&J, focuses on our health IT platforms, so everything we talked about, that middle infrastructure layer, he focuses on. And newest to our team, which we're really happy to have since this past March, is Francesca Wicke, who is our European investor. So she focuses on all the areas that we invest in, but primarily for Europe. And our goal with her is to really deploy a large amount of capital in the next 2 or 3 years within the European community, so we're really happy to have her. But the key really for us is really experienced people, because we use this outsource model. So any sort of junior people we might have had on staff, we outsource that to external firms. And then each of these folks on this team, what's interesting about them, they can do any type of transaction. They can do a venture capital investment, they can do a private equity investment, and they can do an M&A transaction, and all of them are responsible for doing that for the fund.
Excellent. Great. So great overview there of the, traditional corporate venture capital. So just taking the discussion on a bit further now, as I sort of describe it, is innovative new value chains, which I'm seeing now in a number of corporates, a number of sectors I've touched on, about how corporates need to string together different technologies, different startups, in what I term an innovative new value chain, where the business model is going to change, and where an industry or sector and that might change. And when we were in New York, I described a program that we did at McLaren, where we brought together a diabetes testing business and FMCG businesses and pharmaceutical businesses to look at how that innovative new value chain sort of changed. And you then talked about your ecosystem structures. Could you bring that to life by talking it through and giving us one of the examples, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as I said, when we think in terms of the integrated healthcare system that we like to invest in, we created something called ecosystem investing. And how it works in healthcare for us is we actually don't start with a company. We actually start with what we call a use case or a customer need. What we try to do first is try to understand what's happening and can we solve that problem for the end user. So we start with something that in healthcare is called a use case, but it's really just solving a problem. In healthcare, whether it's trying to deliver better care, whether it's talking about lowering costs, or just delivering healthcare more effectively and more conveniently, but it's about solving a problem. The big thing about healthcare that's a little different too, as we think about these problems, it's not really about solving a technology problem, but it's really about solving a healthcare problem utilizing technology. Technology is an enabler. So that's why we don't really start with the company first, we actually start with the problem. So once we actually identify the problem, what we then do is we try to identify what we call an anchor tenant. And the anchor tenant, much like a mall, is the store, if you will, that draws everybody in, so to speak. So it's a company that can solve typically anywhere from 50 to 60% of the use case or the problem which you're trying to solve. It never solves 100%. Those companies are not, you know, easily findable and really don't exist. So we try to find somebody that can actually solve a lot of the issues that we're trying to solve. From that, what we then do is, much like a mall is built, we put stores around it, so we invest around it to fill the gaps. And that's how the ecosystem gets beginning to get built. So you can almost say that the anchor tenant is your sun, and the planets around it are your areas of which you're trying to fill all the gaps of that particular need. And then what we try then to do over time is we then try to connect these companies and have them work together. And they can work together in a number of different ways. So it's trying to really leverage the key strengths that these companies have. And the collaboration can include things like, it can just be a vendor relationship, as I mentioned before. It could be a joint venture or go-to-market sort of agreement. It can be a platform collaboration. Or it actually can be a merger where you actually bring the companies together. But the whole idea is, over time, by building this ecosystem, it allows us to build bigger scale. So should a Merck want to partake in whatever that use case is solving in, it's easier for them to do it by aggregating companies together and bringing a much more integrated solution to the market versus that point solution. And what that scale then does for Merck or any parent is it drives better relationships with the customer you're trying to help, but it also drives the scale you're looking for, which for us happens to be revenue and EPS. Because when you build a bigger solution that takes care of a wider net of end users, you have a better ability then to drive what you're trying to do for your parent. And again, for us, it was around driving revenue and EPS ultimately in the company. So we call it roll-up. How do you actually move to a roll-up? So you might start with just a company or companies with you know, handshakes or some kind of commercial agreement. But the whole idea over time is, once you figure out which companies best work together in that ecosystem, and it may not be all the ones that you've invested in that ecosystem. You might have six companies in the ecosystem, and four of them are the ones that, if you actually brought together, deliver the best solution. And that's what we would then do. We'd actually bring them together. And a perfect example of how we've actually done this is we've created an ecosystem around remote care monitoring in the cardiac space. So how do we do that? So we started actually with a venture investment, which we called our anchor tenant, in a company called Preventice, but it actually started with a use case. And the use case in this particular instance was the high prevalence of AFib, or atrial fibrillation, which many people have. It's a fluttering of the heart, which can lead to things like stroke or heart attack. And the question was, how do we actually solve it? Because that's what was causing all of that 30-day readmit into the hospital program, where a patient gets discharged, but they end up back in the hospital because they can't control this AFib event. So we invested in this little company called Preventice, and what Preventice actually was just the front end of the monitoring. They had a patch that looks like a Band-Aid that could actually do full AFib monitoring in a closed-loop system. They could actually take the reads off the device, and our partner in this particular instance was Mayo, and they would send those to the Mayo Cardiology Lab, and they would read them and then get back to the patient and manage the patient. But as we began to invest around it, what we found is, well, Preventice only was the front end. It was just the patch. But we actually didn't have any back end. Like, how do you handle a call center? Who's actually doing the readings? You know, where are the electrophysiologists? How do you clean the devices and get all the different devices out to the patient? You know, how do you handle reimbursement? You know, all the things that actually are around the solution of monitoring a patient. So what we ended up doing was identifying a company called eCardio. And what we decided to do was have them begin to work together in a commercial partnership. And we found that their commercial partnership worked so well, where Preventice was providing the front end, the actual device, and eCardio was providing the back end, the actual physical monitoring, that we decided to roll them up and bring them together into an integrated solution where we actually had the ability to offer both the front end and the back end in a single entity. One of the pieces we were missing, though, was the care coordination component. You know, how do you actually care for the patient if they're on this device? So we ended up acquiring a third company called C3 Nexus, which actually is just a care coordination company around the 30-day readmit in the cardiovascular program. So they actually have nurse programs that contact the patient, actually walk the patient through how to use the device and how to manage their condition, so a full care coordination program. And the interesting thing, by bringing those three pieces together, we actually are a better solution for anybody that wants to do cardio monitoring, because we actually have the front end, the back end, and the care coordination component. And what we ended up doing, which is sort of an interesting way to do it, we actually, as Merck, through our private equity fund, consolidated all three companies together. But we realized that Merck actually is not a cardiovascular company. It's not our, one of our therapeutic specialties. So we actually then deconsolidated our position and brought in Boston Scientific as our lead partner, them being a, both a device company and a cardiovascular company. And that relationship's been going fantastic since then. And we've built what we consider one of the best-in-class top cardiovascular monitoring companies in the country. But it was all done through identifying this ecosystem around what's the problem, what are the companies that help fill fitting that problem, and then can you bring them together through investing, and that's what we did.
So, Bill, excellent story in that there, and certainly the, you know, the key messages I pick up for that is because you're focusing on need rather than just doing point investments. I think you've also orchestrated, you've seen what's happening in the marketplace, you've seen the technologies, you've seen what's happening in the business model, and you're the one who helped to orchestrate bringing together, first of all, the partnership and the relationship between, as you said, Preventice and eCardio, and then you did the transactional side as well then to make it something of scale and get away from just doing this point solution, or get away from also recognizing that it's not just about doing something that fits in with the current business, which might be a tactical thing. You're looking at a something that's more coordinated and further out, which I think is a fantastic example of, say, what I term innovative new value chains, and you talk on the ecosystem that year. So that's excellent. Now, in terms of performance measures, what's you know, this split between financial return and strategic sort of return, and are you able to sort of share the sort of the financial sort of benefits of doing the approach you've done here?
Yeah, well, the financial benefits are rewarding because, you know, an example would be the way we did the Preventice eCardio deal. When we ended up deconsolidating our position, because we had created such value, we actually paid Merck back all the money we had previously invested in both the venture capital firm and the growth equity firm, or the private equity firm. So it'll, you know, it does allow you to bring scale. And what's the interesting thing too is that as a corporate, and this is where corporates can add better value, is that they are one of the few entities that actually have the ability to do this aggregation of assets. Typically private venture firms don't have the ability to do that, and certainly private equity firms do, but we have more expertise within our own industry and actually make a better partner to these companies than actually a private equity firm, because we have skin in the game. We're in healthcare as a vendor, yeah, which is what Merck does. So I think that's important, you know, a component of it. You know, but generally speaking, for our fund, just as a sort of secondary highlight, you know, the way we're measured as a fund is in a couple different ways. We're measured from a financial perspective, as we said, that, you know, obviously Merck didn't hire me to lose money. They would like us to provide a return and be evergreen. The important thing for us is that we don't ever have to go back for Merck to replenish the $500 million fund. The whole purpose for us is to be self-sufficient, and Merck allows us to keep any gains we get on sales of our assets, and then we just, you know, replenish the fund and keep moving forward and keep adapting our strategy. So we are under sort of a financial measure of the fund performance, pretty simple, you know, fund performance over both the 3-year and 5-year period. And then from the strategic side, are we actually doing what Merck asked us to do? Are we giving them optionality around M&A? Are we giving them assets that they believe are viable that they can acquire and build a type of infrastructure around this sort of non-core adjacency space in which Merck wants to be a part of? And if we're not providing them those assets, then we're not, you know, investing in the right way. Now, fortunately for us, they've acquired a number of our companies, and so we continue to build value. But like anything, you know, some things come in and out based on how Merck changes their strategy around what's strategic and what's not. But as long as we've built a good investment and a good healthcare company, we can exit that, then reinvest in places that Merck might find more attractive over the next few years that maybe weren't, you know, attractive after we originally did the original investment. Because like any corporate, they change, and you just have to be flexible enough to change with them. But we think our model and the way we're rated allows for that flexibility.
Yeah, no, great example there. And back to the beginning of our talk here, where, you know, you're demonstrating the financial return here, and you're giving strategic insights, but also you've now created, in this example of the remote care monitoring in cardiac, you have created a strategic new business which makes the 1+1+1 much bigger than the, just the 3 that you've added there. You've created a new entity with a significant other organization in Boston Scientific and that as well. So I think that's really well illustrated, Bill. Thank you very much for your insights on that there. And my last question, usually on my question time, is what do you do to relax? You were married with two young children and that previously.
They're still married. I have a teenager now, two daughters, and one's just turned a teenager, but they obviously keep me quite busy with their activities. But on a personal level, I love to sail. You know, most people don't realize I actually grew up in Miami, Florida, so always lived on around the ocean and love to sail and boat, and certainly like to golf. Do I travel a lot with my job? I do like to travel with my kids and my family. I get quite enjoyment out of that as well. So that's what I try to do to de-stress and enjoy some personal time.
Excellent. Bill, really appreciate your time again. And I know you're going to be speaking on my panel at the GCE Symposium in London on May the 23rd. So I look forward to seeing you in person again in a few weeks' time. And sharing some more stories in that in the flesh. So thanks so much again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.